Hey, my name is Brian Golden. I'm the lead pastor of Centerpoint Church, and I just want to personally thank you for listening to our podcast. And I also want to invite you, wherever you are around the country or in the Tampa Bay area, to join our digital online campus at centerpointfl.org. And here's what you need to know. Our vision is to create an alternative to church as usual for all people. And all that means is, regardless of whether you've been a longtime follower of Jesus, you're new to faith, you're investigating faith, or you don't even know what you believe, our goal is for you to feel like you belong, even if you never believe. And so thank you again for listening, and I hope today's message encourages you and helps you.
Good morning, everybody. So if you're anything like I was growing up, your parents put you in some kind of extracurricular thing, right? Like some sport, some instrument, some art class, something. And we always put kids in these things, or generally, like we're not thinking their kids gonna be like world-class athletes. Although there's always that family that's like, watch, every time I throw the ball to my two-year-old, he hits it every single time. Tomorrow was like, yeah, when the scout starts to come check out two-year-olds, then, you know, when they offer him a contract, I'll be interested. But generally for most of us, it's like, I just want you to like have fun, enjoy, learn a new skill. For me growing up, that was like, hey, we're gonna put you in a lot of different sports. Never highly competitive, but just like fun, a sport, scouting, martial arts, all the different things, because we want you to have some intangible things, right? We want you to learn a new skill, to have a coach, a teammates, all those things. And I had a pretty good experience with that. So as a dad, a couple years ago, I was like, we should do the same thing for our kids. You know, we should put our girls in soccer, because that's like what you do, right? So we found a league in the area. It was like a learning league, because they've never played before. We signed them up, and my wife, Rachel, was like, I'm all about this. I'm excited about this, but here's the thing, like, you cannot be the coach. And not because I'm like ultra competitive or anything crazy like that, right? But just the reality is, we had a two-month-old baby at home. She's like, we're just trying to keep everyone alive and like clean right now, which is like not always the case to keep them all clean. But like we don't need extra responsibility if you go and be the coach. I just know like you're like the sweetest, most loving dad that like they're gonna need a coach and you're gonna be like, I'd step in. I'm just sacrificial. Of course I'll do it. I was like, no, babe, I will not be the coach. Promise, I will not be the coach. And they tell us as we're getting there, like, hey, first the practice goes by, first game, like, hey, we don't have a coach for this team. So if any parents want to step up, and I'm like, no. I'm not going to be the coach. I'm not, you know. Next week goes, and it's even worse. I'm like, find myself talking to one of the other dads, and like, well, my wife said I can't be the coach. She didn't say I couldn't be a coach. So like, maybe we could co-coach, and then I don't, that's not that much responsibility, right? Like, we'll be fine, you know. So I get home. Apparently, there is not really a difference between being the coach or a coach. Kind of a little bit of trouble. One of the problems, though, is if you've ever watched like 6 and 7-year-old kids who've never played soccer before play soccer, like, it's a little rough. And what's even worse is when the coach doesn't really know what they're doing either. Like, I know how to play soccer. I did years ago, right? I could go out. I know, like, don't touch the ball with your hands, things like that. But, like, general, I don't know what I'm doing. We had some practice plans we're trying to follow, trying to get kids to do things. And I don't want to say we were bad because they were young kids and were trying their best. And it's just not true. Like, we were horrible. Like, we were, like, one season, we scored one goal through the course of 8 games. Which is not very good. My co-coach that time, because again, I'm not the coach, I'm a coach. My co-coach goes, well, what if, I have this idea, what if we pay the kids to score goals? I was like, well, I like that idea. The problem is I don't think they're not scoring goals because they don't want to. It's because they can't. Like, it's just, they're not good. And here was probably the biggest problem was not the kids not knowing what they're doing. The biggest problem was the coaches, for myself, is I don't know how to coach these kids. Like, I couldn't give it in, like, practical, simple, hey, do this thing, and you're going to get better. It was just like, run. Just run. Don't touch the ball with your hands. And you're yelling the whole game, not because you're angry, but just because, like, they don't know what they're doing. So it's just like, run. And it was really hard for them to get better at something because I couldn't give them steps and simple ways that they could get better. So we tried soccer, and I was all right. And then, again, a couple years later, we try with our oldest daughter some basketball. Because, again, I'm like, hey, I want you to have some experience. I want you to try things and see what you like, see what you don't like. And I learned this lesson. I was like, I'm not going to be the coach at all. I'm not going to be the coach, a coach, volunteer coach, subbing. I'm not any kind of coach at all. I'm going to just sit and watch my kid play. And she had an awesome coach. It was Coach Saeed. And he would teach the kids. Again, it's kind of a learning league. And I mean, I love because even in the beginning, the very first practice, he said, here's the deal. You're not just here to have fun. I was like, yes. He's like, your parents paid money. You need to focus, pay attention, work hard. We're going to try to win games. And like, we're going to do this, but here's the thing. I want you to enjoy this, but this is not just about fun. We're learning, we're doing something. But here's what he'd say, and this is why he was such a great coach, because the kids who didn't know anything about basketball to the kids who really knew a lot, he would say the same thing every practice, every game. Hey, go home and practice dribbling for 10 minutes every day. He gave something really clear, real specific, practice for 10 minutes every day. And I saw my daughter, Mayla, get better and better at basketball as the season went on because she had something simple and practical that she could do. Because here's the reality. When you understand something and you know what to do with it, it can actually impact your life and you value it more. But the opposite is also true. If you don't understand something, and you can't practice it, it can't impact your life, then eventually it has little to no value for you. And you just kind of leave it. That's why, like, honestly, you don't play piano anymore. That's why you don't play sports. That's why there's so many things that you're like, I just didn't, it wasn't my thing. And for some of us, thankfully, we had teachers, we had coaches, we had instructors that could make it practical, where we could really understand it. And we're like, it just came alive for me. And I really fell in love with this subject or this instrument or this sport. Like, I really enjoyed it. Not because the content changed, but because the person presenting it made it where it was helpful and clear for me. Now, I also think for a lot of us, that maybe that your interaction with the church even growing up, where you were in an environment, and there's a lot of people like this, a lot of people in our church where you grew up, and it was like, hey, we just need to get you through this phase, through this confirmation, through this baptism, through this whatever, and like you don't really understand what's being said, you just kind of smile and nod, right? And maybe there are times where it's even like a legitimate different language. You're like, I don't even know what you're saying, or it's a language you do speak, but not any words you use. And you're like, I don't understand this. And because you don't understand it, can't do anything with it, you can't practice it, and then eventually it has little to no value to you because you can't see it in your life. And for some of you, that's even why you walked away for a season. And it has nothing to do with your belief in Jesus. You're like, no, I think I'm still good with Jesus. I still believe, but I don't really value the teachings of Jesus, or I don't value the church because I never saw that it was valuable in my life. And Jesus' teaching so often was focused on helping you activate your faith, focused on helping you take a step of faith and begin to do things with your faith, because he knew when you understood something and you could do something with it, it can actually change your life. And that's why he would tell so many times through his teaching, he would tell people, follow me. He'd say, follow me. He'd teach something and people would be amazed with his teaching, and he'd be like, okay, follow me and I'm gonna show you how to live. I'm going to show you how to take this and make it part of your life. Now, there's multiple reasons why he did this. One of them is just really practical. Like, nobody could read. Nobody could write. So Jesus could not tell them, hey, by the way, if you like this teaching, go to the table in the back for $4.95. You can buy my book and read. Like, there was no books. So the practical side of it is you had to find someone and follow to see what they do in life and then replicate it in your own life. But also part of it is even deeper with even how we learn. If you go and you research how people learn, one of the things you have to do is you have to apply and practice and evaluate something to truly understand it. So Jesus was saying practically, but also in a deeper intellectual way, if your life changes, you need to follow me, because you'll see that it's true and that it's helpful. But over the course of generations from Jesus till now, we kind of changed it from follow me to believe in me. See, because now we have books, and now we have studies, and now we have podcasts, and now we have so many ways that you can gather information, and we translate and follow me to believe in me, and kind of made it where if you can just believe the right things and pass the theological test, then you obviously love Jesus regardless of how you act. And that's why, like, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but like, we've maybe even been around some of those people that know a whole bunch about the scriptures, but don't love their neighbor as they love themselves, right? And that's even where just in general with Christianity, with following the way of Jesus, and so many people, it gets so difficult when people say one thing and do something else. But it's really easy to say, well, I just believe, but here's the reality of what I'd love for you to just remember is that believing can actually be deceiving. Like, simply saying something like, I believe in this thing, it actually can be deceiving because your life doesn't back it up at all. And when life comes up against you, you're not going to go simply to what your beliefs are. Your life's not going to translate to just what your beliefs are. Your life translates to what you actually do. And this is why Jesus was constantly focused on teaching things that were true, that were clear, and that were helpful. Because he wanted people to have an active faith. He wanted people to be able to do something with his teaching, not simply hear it and go, that's really good. But to actually take a second, slow down and say, like, how do I change this in my life? Because Jesus knew that when we live an active faith that actually honors God the best and the most, like your active faith is one of the things that honors God more than anything else. And it's not like your massive big steps. It's even your small steps where you're moving in the direction of Jesus and you're taking small steps. Like, that is active faith and that honors God. And the opposite is also true though. And if you look through the life of Jesus, his interaction with people, the people that he was harsh with, the people that he was like, had kind of like, honestly, he was just annoyed with, he was frustrated with, it was not the people who did not know and did not do. It's the people who knew a lot about the scriptures but didn't live up to them. And the people who could write the theological paper and argue all the things but failed to love the people around them. And Jesus is constantly pushing towards active faith. Because when your faith is active, it's at that point that your faith can actually change you. That something can happen, that you can value your faith. See, one of Jesus' most famous teachings all about how to have active faith is what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Now, through this, Jesus teaches really how to live life right. He teaches all sorts of things, but the Sermon on the Mount, one of the things is it's uncomfortably practical for us, though. Like, it's so easy, and Jesus even taught something like you've heard it said, don't murder, right? Y'all know, don't murder. Okay, real quick. Before we go forward, I need to know that you know that murder's bad. Y'all know not to murder, right? Okay, good, because I was like, this is going to be a whole different message. Like, Jesus, there's more work than we thought. Like, don't murder people, right? Jesus said, hey, don't murder people. You've heard it said, and everyone goes, yeah, don't murder people. But then Jesus says, this is where it makes it uncomfortably practical. Jesus goes, well, I'm going to tell you, don't hate someone in your heart. Now, chances are, you haven't murdered anybody. But have you hated someone in your heart? See, Jesus teaches things that he elevates and he simplifies. He elevates it to our heart level to go, yeah, murder, everyone can go, yeah, that's a bad thing, but hate in my heart, ooh, like he elevates the standard for us, showing us that our hearts, man, like we're not as great as we thought we were. But he also simplifies it in so many ways where he says, like, hey, love your neighbor as yourself. It's uncomfortably practical. And I would love for you to go check this out because one of the best ways that you can grow in your faith and make room for your faith is through looking at the scriptures and reading them for yourself. But to give you a quick overview, Matthew recounts Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. With Matthew 5, basically Jesus is talking all about how to live right. Like, how are you supposed to interact with people around you? Which for so many of us, when we talk about faith and growing faith, and even that's why we're taking time for the next few weeks to talk about growing faith, like, chances are, if you're here, you want to have a growing faith. You want to have something happen in your life, and you're like, hey, how do I do things right? And Jesus talks about constantly this idea of righteousness, which is not like perfection, because nobody's perfect. But righteousness in the sense of living life right. Like, how are you supposed to live? And he hits on so many things. That's where he talks about, like, you heard don't murder, I say don't hate. You heard don't commit adultery, I say don't lust after people. Like, he hits on so many things about relationships with people around us, that this is how you're supposed to operate in relationships with people around you in chapter 5. And then the next part, Matthew is recording Jesus' teaching, and it's all about how you interact with God. And chapter 6 is all about how to worship right. And he hits on religious practices of people at that time, of things like fasting and giving money away and praying and how your external deeds really reflect your heart. All these things that he's talking about, how to worship right, because you have to be able to interact with other people around you in a right way, but also interact with God in a right way. And Jesus is laying down the foundation and goes, this is how you do this. And then the last part of this teaching is chapter 7, where Jesus goes into, this is how you evaluate right. Like, this is how you can do things. And again, Jesus begins with relationships with people around you. Of, hey, if you have a person that you know that you have to talk to, this is how you should do that. Right? Like, you should kind of evaluate yourself, right? And then go talk to them. And he also brings up this idea of evaluation, because every one of us, honestly, we're going to be evaluated in life. And not evaluated in the sense of judgment or condemnation, but just evaluated. See, I think even for some of us, anytime you were evaluated growing up, it was condemnation. Right? Like here's the reality. A grade on a test is simply an evaluation of you understanding the content. But for some of us, certain grades meant judgment and condemnation from people, whether teachers or parents or other individuals, right? So we have a hard time understanding the difference between evaluation and condemnation. But Jesus, in this passage, he's not talking about condemning or judgment. He's simply teaching you will be evaluated on life. And this is the thing with believing, even where it can be deceiving, because belief alone doesn't change your life, and your beliefs are evaluated through your actions. It's through what you do. And Jesus is teaching this passage, and really the goal is he wants us to be ready for the evaluation. He wants us to know it's coming, to understand like life is gonna come, you're gonna be evaluated from people and just life situations that are coming, that are gonna show what you actually believe and how you do it. Like it's coming. So Jesus wants us to be ready, so he teaches us how to live an active faith. And then he gets to this kind of summary point he wants to make for people, and he says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice. I'll say practice. We're talking about practice, right? It's not believe. It's not anyone who hears these words of mine and can write a 5-page theological, it's not, hey, anyone that can argue this with the people around you. It's anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, who does something. This is what I think is so interesting, even with myself and with current context, is we love to be impressed with communicators, right? You watch your TED Talk, and you go, wow, they knew their stuff, and they had their numbers, and their statistics, all these, wow, it's great. We love to be impressed. I don't love to be challenged all that much. And you can be impressed with something and intellectually understand with them, but when you get to practice, that's when the challenge comes, where you actually do something with what you learned. Jesus says, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man. Like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down, and Jesus is saying, this is the evaluation of the storm. The rain came down, and the streams rose, and the wind blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall because its foundation was on the rock. Now Jesus is teaching, if you want to be wise, which all of us want to be wise, like we want to see things in the future and we want to, so many, like we want to control the future, which is totally impossible, but we want to be able to predict and protect against the future. We want to be wise. We want to apply wisdom to our lives. We want to be wise. And Jesus says the key to wisdom is application. It's practice of doing something. Then Jesus goes and he compares this wise person who built his house on the rock with another person. He says, but anyone who hears these words of mine says, does not put them into practice. Jesus doesn't say anyone who hears these words and doesn't believe them, you don't practice, you don't do anything with them, you're like a foolish man, a foolish person who built his house on the sand. Same thing happens. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against the house. But a different outcome, it fell in a great crash. Now Jesus is teaching, for every single one of us, you get to choose what you practice. You don't get to choose what storm comes against you, though. And for so many of us in life, man, we go through life and we're like, man, I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing or not. And even in church, there's a lot of uncertainty. Even we teach this class here every couple of months called How to Understand the Bible, or Making Sense of the Scriptures, to help people understand the Scriptures and make sense of it. Because so many people we have in this environment, every time we go through it, they're like, I've been in church a little bit, or some people like, I've been in church a long time, and I still don't understand so much of the Bible. And it's intimidating. Even you hear something like this, and you're like, well, I have to practice. Like, how much do I have to practice? This is a big book. Like, do I have to understand all of it? Like, how much do I have to know? And this is what I'd say is, simply just go with what you know. Just go with what you know. And that's why Jesus taught and simplified things so well. Things like, love your neighbor as yourself. It's not hard to understand that, right? It's really hard to apply that, though. And there's times, even situations where people will come and ask questions in a marriage or in a relationship, in this coworker thing, like, how do I act? What am I supposed to do? And it's so funny, because I would love to like give you exactly what you should do every time, but the reality is, it's the bigger thing is, just love them. One of the things we talk about almost every single week here is answering this question in difficult situations, answering this question is, what does love demand of me? It's pretty clarifying. It can be difficult to do, but it's clarifying. So if you're like, I don't understand, I'm not sure what to practice, just go with what you know. Because here's the reality. Any step is better than no step. Any movement, any step in obedience and practicing the way of Jesus is better than no step, because this thing Jesus taught is that storms come to everyone. He didn't teach that the wise person, the person that practices what I'm teaching, they will build their house in a land where no storms ever come and it's just rainbows and unicorns all the time. He didn't teach, if you practice these words of mine, your life will be perfect and pain-free and it'll be great. And can I tell you, that's a lot easier to talk about. That's a lot easier to preach. Like, you probably want to hear that. I want to be able to say that, right? You just do what God says. And honestly, it'd be better for me too, because it probably would raise my salary. Because usually, here's the thing, usually when you have that methodology, that belief system of, if you just believe it, generally it's like giving is tied to that. So like, you should give more money, because the more you give, the greater you get to live, right? That's not what Jesus teaches, because Jesus teaches a real life, practical way of life. He says storms come to everybody, and we get to prepare for the storm. And what you do now matters as you prepare for the storm, because here's what I know for every single one of us is we're gonna have difficult situations. And practicing the way of Jesus and actually doing something determines what happens in those storms. See, about 20 years ago, there's this couple named Jay and Catherine, and they met in college, and they're like college sweethearts, like they're just great. And they love each other, and they love Jesus, and like their life is awesome. Like, he's studying law, and she's doing her thing, and like they're kind of, if we're honest, like probably people we'd be a little jealous of. Like, everything's just going right for you. Like, your relationship's awesome, and everything's great, and they're following Jesus, and they get married in 2004 and move out to Southern California to pursue the next chapter of life, where she's gonna be an actress and a model, and he's studying law, he's gonna practice law. And life is just going awesome. Again, they're following Jesus, they're loving each other, and everyone's looking like, man, that's the life I want. That's like, they're just doing awesome, and she gets pregnant, and they have a son. It's such a joyful situation, and then about 6 months after their son is born, Catherine's in the kitchen, and she is, you know, doing whatever, dishes, cleaning up after a baby, because that's all you're doing for the first, you know, year or so, well, probably 18 years, maybe. She starts to not feel very well, and pretty quickly collapses as she's suffering a massive stroke. And in an instant, their life is completely turned upside down. Thankfully, someone's able to be there to help and rush her to the hospital, and she survives a stroke. And it's like, man, we have this long road of recovery ahead. And if you have ever walked with someone who has suffered a stroke, and not like their posts on social media about the good days, but like the bad days, like, it is hell to recover through that. But Jay and Catherine are together. They're unified. And even in the midst of this incredibly difficult time, they decided, we are going to continue following the way of Jesus. As Catherine learns how to eat again and how to talk again, and she learns how to hold her baby again, how to brush her hair, and Jay's right there with her the whole time. And they're walking through this horrible storm. But here's the thing, they didn't start practicing the way of Jesus in the midst of that storm. They started years before. And they're confronted with this reality of, this is our new normal. And even in interviews, people would talk to Catherine, and she's talking to people, and they would say, man, like, how could you be like? And she's like, this is not the life I'd ever choose, but I really like my life. So now she's has a very difficult time moving and talking, all sorts of things, but she eventually decides that I want to use this story, I want to use our story, and we're going to try to impact some other people, because we believe that's the way of Jesus, that we surrender everything for God's use, even the storms. And she begins speaking at camps, and she's talking to one camp. You can see this picture of her and her husband. They're a beautiful couple. And in 2014 or so, I thought, man, we just feel really called Like, we need to start something for people. So they start this camp called Hope Heals, where they're able to minister to families with disabilities, parents with new diagnoses, like all sorts of situations. They're able to show love, and now she's written a book, and they've been on TV and all these things. But the reality is their house did not fall, not because they were lucky, not because they loved each other enough. Their house did not fall because they decided to practice the way of Jesus years before a storm came. You see, Jesus does not promise us a pain-free life or a storm-free life. But Jesus, and this is why he focuses teaching things that are true and clear and helpful, is because Jesus wants to offer us a way to prepare for the storms of life. Now, your storm may be massive. It may be similar to Jane Catherine's story. Or it may be smaller in comparison, but still massive in your life. Here's the reality. Just because it's not life-altering doesn't mean it didn't impact your life. And there are situations that we are going to walk through that are difficult, and this is why Jesus calls us to follow him. Not simply believe. Because following the way of Jesus prepares you to weather the storm. Because when you come around, or you are in situations where you believe and intellectually go, I felt something emotionally, like, yeah, like, but you don't do anything with it, here's the reality. I said earlier that believing is deceiving, and here's the tragedy, is you're not deceiving other people. See, we can see hypocrisy in other people, can't we? It's really easy. You said this and you did that. But when we simply think believing and I know the right things, but we don't do anything, what James would say is that you're deceiving yourself. See, James said it this way, as he's writing to the early church all about practical knowledge, all about how to be wise and take the teachings of Jesus and to live out the way of Jesus in a real and normal way. He says, don't merely listen to the word and so deceive yourself. Do what it says. See, proximity does not equate to life change. Simply being in the right context, being in the right environment, it doesn't mean your life's gonna change. It's through practice that your life changes. And you have to do things. And that's why here, even at Centerpoint, one of the things that we do is really intentional, is really focused. And one of the ways that we help people grow in their faith is we focus on teaching things that are true, that are clear, that are helpful. True, clear and helpful in every environment, and kids and students on Wednesday nights, on Sundays with adults, we are always focused on teaching things that are true, clear, and helpful because we want you to take a step. Because we would agree with Jesus that an act of faith is a thing that honors God, so we want to make it so simple and clear for you to take a step and to have active faith. So what can you do? Like, how can you do something? First of all, I'd say is you can take a seat. Like, you can take a seat, and what I mean is you can come, and you should come, and you should be here. Again, proximity does not mean your life is going to change. It's only through practice, but you should be in a context where you're hearing teaching that is true, clear, and helpful, where you are understanding the message that's being taught, and there's all sorts of resources. Right? You can get things online. You can watch online, but I would even say even more so, one of the most powerful things is to be in the connection and community with people. I just say, I don't think online's enough. Got to be around people. It's even why we have these things here we do called growth groups, which we're launching a growth group this month, and really focus on helping people understand the way of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, and to grow in following Jesus. Not just grow in intellect, not just grow in knowledge, but really grow in following Jesus. So you need to take a seat, you need to be around some people. But also, and this is even more important, is you need to take a step. Like, you need to do something with what you hear. You need to do something with your faith. And this is the crazy thing that it's hard to even explain, but this is something like you have a responsibility to do. Like, see, growing your faith, there's just this interaction between God and you and growing your faith. And so often, you know the step you should take. And every single message, I'll let you in on a little secret. Every message we do, whether it's kids or students or adults, there's always a step to take. We always try to point you to a question to answer, something to reflect on, a passage of scripture. a conversation you need to initiate. But here's also the reality. That's us as pastors and leaders trying to help you see a step to take. But also, so often I hear time and time again, oh my goodness, I came and you were talking directly to me and there's something in my life going on that I needed to take a step in and you gave me clarity on what I need to do. I tell you, I don't know that I gave you clarity as much as God's Spirit came and worked in you to give you clarity on what you should do. So I want to inspire you and encourage you. Hey, this is a step you could take, but so often you know there's a step to take. Even for some of you right now, you know there's a relationship that's kind of off the rails and it's difficult and you're like, man, I need to initiate a conversation. Some of you, it's I need to forgive a person. Some of you, it's even right now there's a habit, there's a thing in your life that you're like, this has the opportunity to destroy everything, but I'm scared to death to talk about it with anybody. Your step may look different than the step I have for you or than the step that I need to take, but you can still take a step. And this is where we see the beauty again of making room for God to do something in us, that God's Spirit works with our spirit to direct us on what step to take, not because of condemnation, but because of evaluation. A storm is going to come. And I love, like, so many of you, I'd say all of you, but I don't know all of you. Probably should love all of you, but I love you, right? All of you. I love my kids. I love my family. And what I would hope more than anything is that I could keep you from harm, that I could keep my kids from harm, that my wife, myself, like, we would not go through difficulty. Can I tell you that's not reality, though? And while I would love to keep you from harm, that's impossible. Because we live in a fallen, broken world. That's not fair. Look at Jay and Catherine, their life, their future looks completely different, and it's not fair. And you're gonna have things in your life that you've already walked through, that you will walk through, that are not fair. And I get it. And that is why Jesus leads us to follow him. Because practicing and following the way of Jesus is the thing that will prepare us to weather any storm. And that's the kind of faith you see where you go, I cannot even imagine walking through that. Tell you the truth, I don't know if I have half the faith that Jay and Catherine have. But I want to. So I need to be able to take a seat and be around some teaching that I understand, and then I need to take a step. And that is when you will see your faith grow. Over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about some practical things that you can do in your life to continue to make room for God to grow your faith and for you to grow confidence in God, because the storms will come, but God is bigger than the storms, and he calls us to practice his way to prepare us. If you would pray with me, I'd appreciate that. God, thank you for being good enough to us, God, to direct us in the way we ought to live. God, to show us things that we can do to prepare for difficulty. God, I know there are people in the room that are walking through horrific situations. God, people with kids that have just, man, it's a relationship that just breaks the heart. God, there's diagnosis, there's work things, there are financial things. God, there's so many things going on in the room and in our lives that we, God, we need to be prepared for. I pray that you would give us clarity on how to do that. And God, that we could take a step in your direction, and that through following you, God, you would prepare us for anything that lies ahead. Not that it will be easy, but God, that our life and our house will not come crashing down when the difficulties come. We love you. We thank you for being so good to us. Amen.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this message or have been impacted by Centerpoint Church in any way, would you consider helping us out in one of two ways? First, if you would just spread the word, share this message with your friends, family. Maybe you could go rate and review our podcast on your favorite podcast catcher, but this helps us so much more than you know. And secondly, this ministry is supported by people like you through their financial generosity. And so if you've been impacted by any of these messages, would you consider giving to support the mission and vision of Centerpoint to see people reach with the radical grace of Jesus? You can give today on our website at centerpointfl.org. And again, that's centerpointfl.org.